Hello and welcome to another episode of Photography Down the Line. My name's Ben Harmon and I'm the director of Stills, a centre for photography based in Edinburgh. Please visit stills.org to find out about us and how you can get involved and support our work. For this final episode of 2023, I spoke to Craig Atkinson from Cafe Royal Books. Our conversation coincided with an exhibition at Stills, which included a display of the first 600 Cafe Royal Books titles, covering a vast range of subject matter associated with Britain and Ireland between 1960 and the year 2000. Thank you for listening. Hello, am I speaking to Craig Atkinson?
You are. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Craig. Thank you very much for taking the time to do this. What might I be interrupting with this call?
I'm in the office studio at the moment in Southport, and I am in the middle of packing Christmas post. So that's it's a welcome interruption.
Yeah, I imagine a really busy time of year for you, and packing and postage must take up a big chunk of your time working on Cafe Royal Books.
Yeah, no, it does take up a while. I mean, it's all, you know, the sort of whole job is kind of enjoyable, but that's the bit that gets a little bit repetitive.
And I wonder, for people that might not be that familiar with Cafe Royal Books, could you introduce it, if that's okay? Just sort of say a little bit about what it is. Also interested to hear you talk a little bit about how it all started as well. So a bit of a two-part question there.
Yeah, sure. So, well, it started as a kind of test, really. I mean, I studied fine art and I used to paint, and painting was the thing that I would only do at the time. And as time went on, my mind, the sort of paintings were fighting against themselves in a way, in terms of size and cost and storage and the speed of them and so on. So I wanted a way to make and disseminate art, I suppose, without relying on a gallery space, and in a way that was affordable and democratic and so on. And I was familiar with sort of zine formats and pamphlets and things. And so I'd gone back to drawing by this point and sort of left painting. And so I thought, well, I'll put these drawings into this zine format, just using a photocopier and a stapler and trimmer that I had at home. And then started to sort of trade them with other people that I'd met through MySpace at the time, which was like a great way to network when it was sort of setting off. It was before Facebook and that. So that's kind of how I started publishing, I suppose, in a very basic sense. And then what I do now is publish work that has links to Britain and Ireland, so documentary photography, really, that was made between 1960 and roughly 2000. And it's become this sort of long series. I published roughly a book a week, and I've done that since 2012. So it's become this kind of big printed archive of Britain during that time, I suppose, or photography that's linked to Britain and Ireland during that time, which I don't think existed, well, didn't exist before I started doing that. So as I've started to realise things like that along the way, that's become a kind of an important factor in what I do. So yeah, that's kind of, that's like since 2005 in 30 seconds.
So yeah, Cafe Royal Books is 18 years old, but the current format since 2012, I mean, it's such an amazing output. It's so impressive. It's so admirable. And yeah, I can't think of anywhere. It must be unique in the way you've created this published archive of photography from associated with Britain and Ireland since 1960. I mean, to get all that kind of information together in one place, you know, you'd have to draw upon so many different publishers and collections and archives. I should point out that the reason for this call is that currently Cafe Royal Books is the title of an exhibition at Stills in Edinburgh, which is on until the 10th of February. So we're exhibiting posters, pictures that you've selected from various titles, and then we're housing a display of the first 600 copies of Cafe Royal Books. But you must be well over 600 by now if you're doing one a week. Do you know roughly where you are with numbers?
Yeah. So in total, yesterday I released the, this is going right to the start now. So 1076th publication
Wow.
yesterday. But since 2012, it must be about 640-ish of this series now. So yeah, that's that kind of bigger number includes like reprints and second prints and so on. So it's a bit sort of inflated, but yeah, it's a lot of books, I suppose, but it's like enjoyable. And you're right, I think it's kind of, it does collect all this work, and it ha some of it has been printed elsewhere in the past. Not much of it hasn't. Much of it's never been seen, but it's yeah, I try and keep things sort of uniform, and the, you know, the books are this weekly, kind of like when I was a kid, I'd used to get like the Beano or magazines or things, and they were like this, you know, the same format
Yeah.
every time. It's just that the contents were different, and I always liked that sort of system of kind of not too much change, but the content, like the format of it, allowing the contents to change, so you never really know what you're going to get until you open it up, because even though it sort of looks the same from the outside in many ways.
Conceptually, I think that's so interesting. And what we realized when we installed the books at Stills, the 600 copies, is that actually immediately we had, with the books facing out from the shelves, immediately an exhibition of 600 pictures, because there's always an image on the cover, and they work so well like that as objects as well. But like you say, they're it's extremely affordable. They're, I think, roughly £7 now to buy, and quite often you're looking at pictures that are very rarely seen, or perhaps haven't been seen before or published before.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've always, since the first thing that I published in 2005, the cost has always been a sort of massive factor, really. The cost for me to make, but also the cost for people to buy. And I, you know, there's plenty of sort of big hardback books that are brilliant printing and so on, really beautiful objects, but they're very expensive, and not everybody can afford that kind of book. So that's been a very conscious decision to keep them as affordable as I can, you know, the price of a sort of Starbucks coffee or a pint or something.
Yeah, I'd like to come back to that point about accessibility and the sort of democracy in what you're doing. But I wondered, so I'm sure a lot of people don't realize, I mean, sometimes when I'm giving tour of the exhibition we have at Stills, I'm describing Café Royal Books as a publishing house, and probably some people are imagining a office building in London and a warehouse somewhere else. And but people don't realize that you're doing this all yourself, and you always have done. So
Yeah.
am I right? You're liaising with the artists, you're doing the design, the printing, as you've already said, taking things to the post office. It's always been a solo venture.
It has, yeah. And it's from when I started, because the books were so infrequent and so sort of disparate, and much of it was my own work that I was publishing, when it was drawing that I was publishing. That was kind of easy, and it was done, you know, once in a while, so that was fine. So it could only be me then, and the sort of, it wasn't really a publishing house then, I suppose. But since 2012, it definitely has been one. And yeah, I mean, it's routine. You know, the books come out once a week. They all take the same or very similar format. I've always used the same printer, as post has become more the Royal Mail now come and collect it from me, which is good. There's things that have made it easier like that, but yeah, I mean, there's more and more, and it's like every week seems to be a little bit busier than the last, which is great. And you sort of, because it's been so gradual, you sort of always find time. But then when you, there's some weeks when you sort of look back and think, actually, I could do with another pair of hands here or something,
Yeah, sure.
which is where the kids come in sometimes. But yeah, it's, I mean, from, yeah, so from idea to kind of posted product, if you want to call it a product, that's, yeah, it's me that does it, really. The printers print for me, and the, you know, obviously the photographers have made the work, and they're very kind to let me publish it. But yeah, it's a kind of a one person job at the moment.
The photographers, artists, family members are people who are working for photographers' estates that I know that have worked with you have always said really good things. And I think they like they like the fact that in some ways it's quite uncomplicated what you're asking for. They understand the format. They've seen previous issues. They know they want the work to be in, and they seem to really enjoy working with you. Marketa Luskakova being one who's our summer exhibition at Stills this year. Do you enjoy working with the photographers and their estates? And do you ever think of yourself as a curator? Because I think a lot of what you're doing is probably curating.
Very, very loosely a curator. It's a word that I kind of tried to walk around, really, because I'm not a curator, I suppose, is the first thing. But yeah, I mean, more collector, maybe, I suppose. I have this kind of collector's mentality. And I suppose curator in terms of what I publish, it has to be selected because there's so many submissions that I can only publish some of them. So in that sense, in terms of the bigger, longer series, then it's curated in a way, but it's kind of collected. This work's collected together and I present it as a whole, although each book's important in its own right. So it's sort of in between the two things, really, collecting, yeah, sharing and curating. But working with the photographers and estates and everybody else involved is brilliant. It's there's so many different characters as there is in kind of all parts of life, I suppose. And everything has to be very straightforward because, as we've said, it's just me. It kind of, I can't go and meet all these photographers and I can't spend that much time kind of chatting to them and things. So it has to be a very straightforward, very straight to the point. It's done digitally. Everything's done digitally. So the photographer, if they don't have scans, would need to get scans, which is a good thing for them to do anyway, to sort of preserve their work. But yeah, I mean, it's great. It's very straightforward. And it's not like I'm, again, publishing these kind of heavier books that are being sent overseas to be printed and then shipped somewhere else to be bound and then come back and they take months and they take thousands and thousands of pounds and so on. So it's a lot lighter than that. And it's probably a lot more fluid and flexible. You know, I think for me anyway, I like that feeling of being able to be sort of quite fluid and shift a little bit as, you know, as things go. And also because of the way that I print and make books, they don't cost a massive amount to make. So that affords me the sort of chance to publish people's work that, you know, has never been seen. And perhaps larger publishers or publishers who produce larger books probably wouldn't take that risk or would ask those people to pay them to make the book. So it allows me a bit more freedom, I think, working this way. So yeah.
I know curating is such an overused word these days. I'm almost sorry that I brought it up, but
no, it's, I mean, it's a massively overused word, but there are still curating, you know, there's galleries, well, as you know, galleries and curators, and it's an important job, but but then you go to the coffee shop and there's curators or curated coffees and sandwiches and things there. So it's a kind of buzzword, isn't it, at the moment? I'm sure it'll turn to something else soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are a collector, it's the most sort of generous definition of the word, because you're collecting really to share with everyone. And that's one of the amazing things about it. It's funny in a way that everything's printed digitally, and yet I imagine probably 90% of the photographs that you publish come from analog 35mm film. Is that the case? Because obviously you're mostly pre-year 2000 and a lot of the work goes back to the 60s and 70s. Is that right? And does that affect whether a majority of them are also printed in black and white? And I'm wondering if that's because in most cases the source material is black and white film photography.
Yeah, mainly everything that you've just said is right. So that probably more than 90% is analog originally, the photography. It's printed digitally really for cost and speed, and the machines now, especially for the black and white, really are, you know, litho does a very good job, but the cost involved in short run printing, especially printing in the UK, is kind of, you know, it's huge, and it would take the affordability out and it would take the speed out as well, the one a week thing. So they're printed digitally for lots of reasons, but the quality is very, very good now. And especially if you know, I kind of carefully select the paper that it's printed on and so on. So it works well, I think. And yeah, pre-2000, most of it's analog. Most of it is black and white. Naturally, there's some, I mean, as time goes on, I'm making more and more color books. Mm-hmm. There's not often that book is color and it's converted to black and white, but sometimes I suppose I wouldn't know, you know, if that's the photographer's preference for the work and they submitted it in that way, there's occasions that I wouldn't know. So yeah, it's kind of, that's sort of how it's come so far. But I imagine as time goes on, you know, as the sort of live time goes on, the 2000 endpoint that I publish goes on as well. So it's you know, in 20 years' time, it'll be up to 2020 that I'm publishing ish, and then there'll be much more color and there'll be much more digital work. There'll be much more work. Full stop. I imagine.
How do you feel about that? You're just. Do you feel happy to embrace that and keep things going when you do reach that point?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's so many, you know, the thing with Bones is that they have made people, I'm sort of saying this very off the cuff with no thought whatsoever, so it might be wrong, excuse me. But the thing with phones is it's allowed people to have a camera of some sort with them all the time. And it's made people more aware of recording things, and it's made some people, I suppose, more aware of composition and how to frame an image and grids and rule of thirds and, you know, the kind of the basic but formal aspects of making an image. And that can only be good. And I think the fact that things are being recorded more can only be good mostly. I think there's going to be, I mean, there's so many images now that I guess most of the pictures that people take will never be looked back on. They're kind of recording it. Almost like that collector's mentality that I mentioned before. It's like the kind of the urge to record, and then there's no urge to look at it after. You know, when you see people in concerts and the whole crowd is recording, they're not watching the thing, but they're recording it, and they'll probably never look back at the recording. It's a real sort of strange thing. But yeah, I think in the future, you know, the books, as long as people print and as long as there's a place for the books to go, then I'll carry on and there'll be more work to sift through, more submissions, I suppose. But yeah, might have to be a different way of selecting somehow. I don't know. But yeah, very, very happy to continue.
I'm often talking to people who come to Stills for the first time about and you know, introducing Stills as this organization that's nearly 50 years old. And just how significant that is in terms of how photography's changed. It's mind-blowing really to think of what in the late 70s photography was and how it was, who had access to cameras and was able to print work and get it distributed and so on, compared with today where we're walking around with archives on our phones, like you say, most of which we'll just slowly delete or not even look at again. It is quite astonishing. I wanted to come back to this thing about accessibility and the sort of representation within Café Royal Books. I suppose one of the things I love about it is this idea of a sort of archive that is truly representative. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it sort of like really is holding a mirror up to the world and is about and largely, I imagine, constructed by everyday people. It's unlike this idea of history being written by the victors. It really feels like a very democratic archive, if we can call it that, a collection of work that is really about the lives of everyday people, everyday working people. Yeah, I think that's one of the really important things about it. And then you have this accessible price point so that pretty much anybody can also collect these zines.
I think it's important. I mean, that's nice, that the idea of holding a mirror up. I like that, and I hope the books do that. I think there probably are gaps, and there are probably gaps that I'm kind of working hard to fill as well, so that it becomes a sort of true representation of Britain during that time. And it's not, that was never my intention to start with. It was, in a very, very basic, simple sense, I've always just loved pictures, and I'm always driven to images rather than text. And I've kind of you know, I can get kind of lost in these pictures. And the fact that most of what I've published predates me makes it more interesting for me in a way. It's kind of the whole thing is like a massive learning thing for me in terms of photography, which I knew very little about in the sort of early days of publishing, but also in terms of the culture and of what went on. It's kind of I sort of try and see it that way when I'm making work. Something that has sort of become more apparent to me over time is that as time goes on, there's more and more books, so more and more people see them, more and more photographers become aware of them, and so on. So I get more submissions. And when the work's submitted, 90% of the time, probably, I don't know anything about the person who's submitted, you know, where they're from, their background, anything at all. And so I'm looking at the pictures, and that's it, really. And conversations might happen later or they might not. So that I quite like that very sort of distanced, in a way, almost anonymous submission process, because it takes anything out of, you know, I try to remain very neutral, and I try to let the books have no bias. And it's kind of, you know, all of those things are quite difficult, but without thinking too much about it, I try and let those things happen. So, yeah, the mirror thing is a sort of nice idea. I like that.
Yeah, that I think it's so true and so successful in that sense. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was the scope of the content, because it's so broad ranging. I mean, what's great about the exhibition at Stills is we have all the books, but then there's this selection of posters in the front gallery, which just sort of introduces people to the themes, I suppose, throughout the books, a lot of which seem to be things like the built environment, youth culture, music, protest. It's really interesting as you look through them to pick up on these threads, some of which I imagine, as you explained, are maybe sort of unconsciously coming together as sort of sub-themes. I suppose you've answered this question already, but I was wondering how you make those selections. And is there anything actually that consciously or not you're less interested in? Like, for example, I'm thinking there might be very few books with photographs of uninhabited landscapes, but I'm struggling to think of something that might.
Yeah,
not
be. There are. I get loads of submissions, like you say, and kind of over time there's built up quite a strong amount of work around, say, punks or music and subculture, like you say, and sort of sound system culture recently as well, which is great. It's never a conscious thing that I think, right, I'm going to go out and find a load of sound system work and publish a kind of mini group of those books. That, I don't think that would be right for what I do, really. It has to sort of remain broader and much more general than that. But just by complete coincidence, things do come along like that. And there was I remember one year, it was like I was getting so many submissions around Glasgow. And I think maybe things start with conversations elsewhere, you know, a photographer will chat to another who knows them locally, and you've heard of Cafe Rolling. So then they'll end up submitting work, and then there'll be a Glasgow book, and more people will see it. And so I think these kind of system series build themselves like that. But in terms of gaps, things that maybe I wouldn't publish as much, kind of rural scenes, I'm much more interested in the sort of the city and maybe like the kind of urban environment and family life and think, you know, the high street, things as simple as the high street, which doesn't really exist anymore in many places. It's gone. It's boarded up units now. So these things that quickly go, whereas, again, I'm thinking off the top of my head, you know, talking off the top of my head without any thought, but with the rural kind of setting, I've been sent so many amazing photographs of farming and landscapes and things that really are brilliant and must be published, but probably not by me, because I think for me it's change, really. It's like aspects of change that are interesting, and the idea that things move quickly, life moves quickly. And it's kind of when you look at, for example, John Clarity's East London work from the 70s, it's East London is unrecognizable. It's no longer that place. And like I said, the high street has gone. That's changed. So all these very basic points of everyday life that are either no longer here or moving so fast that, you know, if we don't kind of preserve them somehow, it's gone for good. So that's kind of what I'm interested in. And although the rural kind of farming pictures or whatever it might be, or sailing or something, I do publish them, and I have published them, but very infrequently. I think it's important to include some aspect of some of it at some point, just so that it's a, you know, it doesn't become a kind of a series about just one thing.
And what you said there just reiterates how important it is what you've done, not only from the point of view of photography, but just social history. I can completely understand why collections, universities, museums would be, and frankly should be, buying your archive boxes and things. It's just these extraordinary publications on social history that you just can't really get anywhere else. And I've noticed quite a few of the around the East End of London and Brick Lane, there's some really interesting ones. And knowing that area today, like you say, it's completely different. It's astonishing.
Yeah. I mean, it's always changing, isn't it? I just released a new book by George Wright yesterday, Brick Lane. And yeah, you know, there's this kind of idea now that they, you know, I don't know what goes on in the politics and the developers and everything else, but it seems to be happening. The sort of, they keep the facade of the, like the facier of the original building.
Yeah.
And put scaffolding around it and then build this sort of huge tower block behind it, which is, it's sort of really bizarre. It becomes, it's almost like a sort of film studio where it's like a fake. It's a kind of a pastiche of, but you see, it's really bizarre. But anyway, you know, they're not my decisions to make, but it's I sort of question the decisions that are made by people around that.
And again, you sort of hold a mirror up and invite us to kind of ask those questions too. And I, one thing I really like is it Mick Jones who did the Park Hill Sheffield?
Yes, yeah, a couple of weeks ago that was released. Yeah.
One thing I really like that was sort of reading about him, and it's also not sort of voyeuristic or sort of someone flying in to take these pictures, but he's someone that actually lived there and grew up there.
He lived there for a long time, yeah, and it is the sort of environment that a lot of people did record in some way. But yeah, no, he was, his life was very much there, and he's a good example of someone that I've, because like I say, I'm always interested in the pictures. I'm never really as interested in who took them in a sort of fame or notability kind of way. And so Mick Jones took these pictures. He borrowed a camera from, I think he was at college at the time, borrowed the camera, had it for a while, took some pictures, not many. And this Park Hill set was basically just taken around his life at the time. And then he had to give the camera back, and he never, that was it. That was his photographic career. It was, you know, he loved it. And he says he took, I think his words were, he took to photography like a duck to water, but he had to give this camera back. And then life got in the way, and his money had to go elsewhere. So it wasn't until much, much later, kind of quite recently, that he got another camera and takes photographs for himself and, you know, around his life now. But yeah, so it's an example of someone. I don't just publish the work of photographers, I suppose. Publish the work of people who have taken photographs at a time that are interesting pictures.
Yeah, and I love the way they sit side by side with someone like David Hearn or Martin Parr, but where you might be showing work by a better known photographer, quite often it's work that is much lesser known and maybe hasn't even been published before.
Yeah, sure.
Marquetta is another example. You did a publication on her Chiswick Women's Aid series.
Mm-hmm.
I think she said to me, which was an assignment for Magnum in the late 70s, but I think she said you've published it for the first time. I think one or two pictures might have appeared in a European magazine at some point. But
yeah, she did. She mentioned something like that to me, that it was a commission, and it was a kind of, it sounded like it was a something done, a kind of speculative thing. So go and make something, and it, you know, it might or might not be used. And I think mm-hmm. she said it was never used, which, you know, is bizarre in itself, but it's such an amazing series of work that's, you know, it's very important. the series of work's important, but it's a very important subject as well. And it was nice to be able to publish that. And as it is with Marquetta's work, it's kind of great. We've made 3 books, I think, now.
That's right.
She's like a real pleasure to work with.
She's a big fan of yours, and coincidentally, she did an episode of the podcast we recorded a talk she did, and it's on this podcast a few episodes ago. So I hope people can listen to that. And she does mention you in that episode. I wanted to ask you, we're running out of time a little bit, but I wanted to ask you about you've always used Café Roar books to, like, as you've mentioned, sometimes publish your own pictures. And I think perhaps less so recently, but to begin with, books on things like Preston Bus Station and your interest in brutalist architecture. And there's the series Someone Else's ... which I really love. And Someone Else's Skiing Holiday is one of the books that I'm always drawing people's attention to when I give tours. But are you still interested in doing that?
Yeah, that's been a sort of a fading thing in a way. When I started publishing, as I've said, it was just my work, and then as time's gone on, it's become more about other people's and less about mine, more about me sort of doing the publishing, really, which is fine. And I don't really get the time to sort of go somewhere to make work anymore, to make photographs. So the photographs I take now are simply sort of family archive, just family pictures of events and daft goings on and stuff. So that's sort of where I sit with it. But the Someone Else's series, they were very early books, and I used to go to charity shops and buy film, sort of 35mm cameras, and I'd buy them only if they still had the film in, and rewind that, keep the film and give the camera back to the shop, and then I'd have the film developed. And most of the time, I mean, this was about 2010, and the cameras they'd been obviously sitting around for a long, long time. And when you get the film developed, mostly there's nothing on it. So it's perished. Sometimes there's a few things on it, and very infrequently there was enough images to make or that recorded a day or a story or a narrative or whatever it was. So I was always interested in that idea. And these films, putting a time, there were some negatives that I had done. I think the book was called Someone Else's Dog, and there were people in the pictures that were wearing things that you could quite easily date. So there was a jacket, a cream, the club that was in Liverpool called Cream. There was a jacket that sort of dated the picture. You could tell roughly when. So the girl that was in the picture would be about my age now, I imagine. So that camera must have been sitting in a charity shop at that point for about 25 years, or sitting around for 25 years before it got to the charity shop. So seeing these pictures, no one else ever has seen these pictures apart from the person who kind of looked through the viewfinder originally. So it was a really strange thing. And then you sort of almost become, I kind of felt obliged to sort of look after these pictures in a way, and so put them in these books to preserve them, I suppose. So that was called the Someone Else's series. So it was, someone else's photography. It's not like that. It's not mine. I've just put them in print to sort of look after them temporarily, if that makes sense. It was I always see those as more sort of artist editions rather than photo books or anything. It's kind of a mini series.
I love what you say there. I think that describes what you do so well, looking after pictures. You're also sharing them with everyone else, and it's such a generous thing to do. And long may it continue.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I hope it does.
Yeah, I feel like I've taken up a lot of your time. I should just mention to people that caferoyalbooks.com is where you should head to find out more and make some purchases. And the exhibition at Stills continues to the 10th of February. So I hope lots more people can come and see it. It's such a pleasure to have it on our walls. Do you have any plans for other exhibitions or anything like that you can mention at the moment, or are you sort of ploughing ahead?
There is one actually that's only just, it's sort of come about from the gallery at Stills, I think, from the show at Stills, which is Impressions Gallery, want to show it around the end of next year, I think. So that would be good as well. So that's like the almost a third stop for it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of three shows over 3 years, which is plenty, I think, for me. And it's probably plenty in terms of other people's work, because it's although it's a, I mean, we spoke about this a few weeks ago. It's a very simple seeming show, I suppose, the kind of flat images and then a few boxes of books. But it's I mean, you've done a great job at still sort of hanging it in. The books look amazing at the back, all 600 of them out. It's I never get a chance to see them like that, so it's been really good for me to go and look at as well.
Well, we really enjoyed it. And yeah, of course, we should mention that the exhibition you had at the Martin Parr Foundation in Bristol, where this work was shown before. And that's brilliant news about Impressions in Bradford, and a little bit closer to home for you as well.
It is a bit. Yeah, it's I mean, it's that sort of hit three kind of distinct areas, I suppose, now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be good. Be interesting. It was shown first at Martin Parr, and then it's like a different version at Stills, I suppose, with more books, which is great. And it's always interesting to see it in a different space, because it sort of feels very different in different sort of shapes and size spaces, which is great. So although it's kind of the same show, it's it sort of feels very, very different. And I guess that'll happen again in Impressions. So I'm excited to see that, but I need to think about other things in the meantime.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's brilliant. And of course, the audiences in each place will be quite different. And we've really enjoyed being able to bring out a bit more of the work from Scotland as well. So that, Robert Blomfield, Douglas Corrance, Sophie Gerrard, and so on work. And we've been able to highlight that for the context of Stills, which has been really good. But thanks so much for your time, Craig. I'll let you get away and get back to everything.
And the post.
Yeah, a real pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks, Ben, on you. Cheers.
Yeah, take care. I'll speak to you again soon.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Photography Down the Line and my conversation with Craig Atkinson from Cafe Royal Books. There are more than 50 other episodes of this podcast available, so please do seek out more of our photography conversations via your podcast provider. Thank you for listening.